welcome to the 72 PC Podcast, the only podcast where you can join the conversation and the game. With us this week, we have Tom, who is jamming out with a cat.
Look at that guy.
And we have Eric.
I'm sorry. I love those videos. That's with
one
that
of
cat.
I do too. That's one of my favorite ones. I saw my favorite one I saw this year was it was in October. And it was when you go outside and the leaves are crunching beneath your feet. And it was that cat. And then it was the Goosebumps theme song.
Yeah.
It was so good.
Recently, I've been seeing a lot of different videos with like animals and music. Like earlier this year was puppy dog bouncing in a box.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one, too. I like that one a lot.
My favorite are Party Parrot. I love dancing birds. I love birds that are just getting fucking into it.
Like the ones that are like headbanging to music.
Yep.
Wasn't there one with like a oh my God, the asshole birds, the white ones with like the yellow crest on top.
But
like
it was
the death metal cockatoo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where like it was just like blast beats and then it starts screaming and you see the cockatoo just start going nuts.
Yeah.
I just fucking love dancing birds. It's nothing better in the world. By the way, if you guys haven't seen, like, there's like a Birds of the World exotic birds thing where it shows like the various mating rituals of these beautiful exotic tropical birds you have to. It's fucking hilarious. Like the one that like whips open like its wings and like does a like shimmer and shaky dance. It's fucking hilarious. Birds are goofy as fuck.
The Birds of Paradise from like the footage they got from Planet Earth.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, did you like they sat for weeks in like pitch black? Like it's actually pitch black almost in those shots. That's how good a fucking gear they had for shooting that.
Damn, that's impressive.
Like I don't know if you ever watched like the after credit roll, like extra explaining of all of the episodes.
No,
dude, the shit they went through to get some of those shots, the months of lives just dedicated to getting 6 seconds of footage. It's absurd. I'm also glad they did it because Planet Earth is one of the best documentaries ever made.
Dude, I love Planet Earth. It is so legit. I love even more so that like from an evolutionary perspective, birds are just tiny dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you wonder, like, if birds are that goofy and fucking weird, like what on earth were dinosaurs like? Like, I don't think they were the Jurassic Park run around, stomp shit and eat stuff kind of dinosaurs. I like to think that they're walking around like head bobbing, making sweet jams, just generally being a nuisance.
Guess fucking T-Rex, it's time to mate. He just starts going around like the fucking night at the Rockberries.
I'm getting really sick of the propaganda, guys. Birds aren't real. We know this.
My bad. You're right. Okay, I should say I'm a huge fan of these colorful flighted government drones.
I mean, they should have changed all the batteries by now, right? Like the timeout.
Yeah.
So that should be good. So we should be okay soon.
We were all locked in here because of COVID. That's when they changed the batteries and the birds.
No. You mean we were locked in here so they could change the batteries?
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. They made up COVID so they could change the batteries and all the birds.
Yep.
Yes, exactly. Clearly, we're joking. Don't get us on that mist. But anyway. I wanted to get that out there real quick before all of a sudden we become
some
like,
people take things too seriously.
We're gonna get flagged so
you
hard.
Can't take anything we say on this podcast seriously.
You see, this one gaming podcast says it isn't real. It ain't real.
Wear your mask, wash your hands, listen to your doctors, get a vaccine when you're available.
Watch your hands. Normal.
Yeah, watch your hands and wash them. You know, you never know those hands. They're a little shady.
If they get idle, they do bad things.
Yep.
Anyway, so how was y'all's week?
Busy AF.
We just need to get a soundboard of me asking that question or you asking that question, Adam and Tom's canned answer.
Yep, that's it.
How busy just is Tom busy this week? Oh, busy. Wow. Big surprise. what more new information can you give us?
I did get a chance to play some video games, though, which is nice. It's better than last week where I played basically Cyberpunk and that was it.
Yeah.
We had some of the, like last night we were playing some Dota, had fantastic game, just goddamn epic. Like I don't want to call it a good game. We stomped. Like it was not fun for the other team, I'm sure. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I feel like I played well. And then the game right after that, it was the exact opposite. We just got goddamn destroyed. Just fucking pulverized. And then today was another kind of mediocre, not so good game.
Yeah, but if you want to get specifics, we should have fucking won that game. That we should have. But that's it.
It was great though. Like last night, that first game, we had five people. We were all playing our A game. It was great. We were pushing together, rotating. Like it's, I love the moments in team games where everything just comes together. And last night, yeah, that first game totally did.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Speaking of come together, nice pass, Adam.
Thanks. Good shot.
How was your week, Adam?
Sorry. I haven't had any energy this week. Been kind of in a funk.
You should get you some gamer fuel.
Game.
See that?
Game
We're fuel. Pitching the product. Time to start paying its worth.
Oh, my God.
You didn't even say the product name correctly.
G Fuel. Sorry. They're too gamer to say the word gamer.
I only drink Mountain Dew Code Red, the only drink for gamers.
Okay, mock that all you want. That's my favorite Mountain Dew.
I hate Code Red.
I hate Code Red. Like, it's awful.
I love Code Red. Code Red, I think I might even like Livewire more than I do regular Mountain Dew.
I love Livewire.
Obviously, the best Mountain Dew is Baja Blast, and it's not even close.
Clearly.
Not even a little close.
I don't know if I agree. I will crave that more than any other one. But if I could have access, I think you can now, but if I had access to it on a daily level, I don't think I would want it as much as the others. It's more of a, since I don't get it as often, I cherish the moments I get it.
When you go to Taco Bell.
Yes.
Which is the best. I mean, it's just the perfect combination. Name a more iconic duo. Cheesy Gordita Crunch, Large Baja Blast.
You can't.
So you got, I don't know how familiar you guys are, but KFC has their own dedicated Mountain Dew. I don't know if you guys knew that.
Oh,
it's complete dog shit.
KFC sucks.
Like, I'm on the record of saying, like, before that, I didn't think there was a bad Mountain Dew. Like, even the purple black one I enjoyed. Dude, the KFC Mountain Dew is dog shit.
Like, what flavor
is
it?
I think it was gravy. Like, I can't remember if it was like some kind of
gravy and corn.
It's just gravy thick and glop through. They have to give you an extra wide straw so you could actually drink it. No, I think if I recall, it was a mango or something. I don't know. It was a different type of, maybe apricot.
And that sounds like it would be good because mango is great.
Yeah, I love mango.
But no, it was not a good drink. KFC gravy is so good. Yes, Acro, it is good. However, I do not want that as my beverage.
You are just not American, sir. Unless you're drinking that shit with a straw, get the fuck out.
Oh. Oh. I
do have to say, like, I thought this is years ago now, but do you remember when they were canning and bottling Baja Blast for a while? Like, it was no longer exclusive. I thought the world had gotten to a better place. I thought we had literally evolved as a species. And then it disappeared. Like, apparently you have to keep fighting for progress because sometimes it doesn't stick around.
Yeah.
So Taco Bell is involved in some of the best limited time and novelty specialty bullshit because Baja Blast is great. Nacho fries, best fry in all of fast food.
They don't run them all the time.
Best fry in all, even without the nacho sauce, best fry in all of fast food.
The nacho sauce, the nacho cheese would be the only reason I would get them.
Their seasoning on them is excellent.
I don't know. I can't go to a Taco Bell and get fries. Like,
have you had them?
Yeah, it sounds illegal.
No, but I'm not going to go to, I don't know. Maybe I don't like fries as much as you in general, but like, I don't know.
I didn't get them the first time because I wanted fries. I got them because, the idea of these seasoned fries with nacho cheese sounds pretty good. Yeah, I'll go for that. And then I actually had them like, this is good. They actually do, like, you know how they do loaded nachos? They do it with loaded fries instead.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. So it's effectively chili cheese fries, only it's taco meat.
I do have to say, I know the Nacho Bel Grande, on the scale of quality nachos, it's near the bottom, right? Like, if you're looking at real nachos, real food, the Nacho Bel Grande is kind of a step above garbage, but goddamn if I wouldn't like cleaned the plate of two of those guys in a sitting. God fucking damn. Like, no joke. It's goddamn delicious.
Like, I think that meat quality is about the only way they suffer, though, because in all honesty, I don't think nachos is the thing where you get incredible ingredients and it gets insanely better. It gets marginally better for sure.
Yeah.
But like, I'll take the Bel Grande up with against almost any other that I've had.
It's about the ratio, right? Like, you can easily ruin a plate of nachos by using way too much cheese. I know what I just said is
really
illegal, but hear me out.
I agree. Hear me out.
You need a good crunch to sauce ratio. And if you have too much cheese, all the chips get kind of soggy. You can't pick up anything. Like, it kind of sucks. If you have just chips and cheese, okay. If you have way too many onions, that'll ruin a good plate. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of ways to
onions.
Fuck up good nachos. I don't want soggy nachos. I need a crunch.
You need a lot of cheese. I'm not saying that you don't get a lot of cheese, but like if every chip is just doused in cheese, I'm out.
Yeah, it's got to be a ratio.
The only thing I think you can have a fuck ton of is like jalapenos, but that's also because I'll eat those fuckers straight.
Yeah, I'm not really a jalapeno guy. Like I get it. I enjoy it sometimes, but I've seen people go way too hard on jalapeno. Like, I don't want jalapeno flavored nachos. I want them to have a topping.
I like fresh jalapenos more than the pickled ones. And everywhere
uses
the pickled ones.
I kind of like the pickled ones.
Just too much vinegar. It's a little, for me.
There is a lot there. And also, we're getting called out, Tom. Acro is saying that if you're not eating your nachos fast enough, if the chips are getting soggy.
That's a good point, too.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Or they're using bad chips. Like, you got to have some robust chips.
And I think that's
okay. Not all chips are created equal.
Right? Like, the chips Taco Bell uses, they're bad. Right? They are.
Yeah,
they're basically not good chips.
Above
cardboard.
That's the biggest thing, is get nice, thick, crunchy chips, I think, is the best thing you can do for nachos.
If you can eat the chips alone without any toppings and still enjoy yourself, it's a good chip. Like, Chipotle's nachos? Chipotle's chips are fucking great. They've got the salt,
the lime and salt together. Oh.
It's just goddamn.
And then you get there's always one in the bag that has way too much lime and salt, and it's the best chip in the whole.
What do you mean way too much? You mean there's every other
too
chip
much
that has
as
way not enough.
Not way too much as in it's actually too much to eat, but way too much as in they didn't intend for them all to be that way.
Yeah.
Have you ever read their bags?
Yeah. Those are good.
So like I eat there at work and I would be alone. And the bag actually talks about that chip, the golden chip that has more lime and salt than all the rest.
Maybe they do that on purpose. Maybe they have one.
The self-awareness of it made me smile and laugh a little bit.
I got something interesting in a bag of Chipotle chips. I pulled out a thick boy.
Big boy.
It was clearly something where the cutter didn't go all the way through, because to make the chips, I literally just layer tortillas together and chop them up into chip shapes, right? They make them like real chips. But the cutter didn't go all the way through, so you had like a stack of eight chips bound together on one edge, but they were still separated in the middle. So they all got fried appropriately, and they caught all the salt and all the lime. It was incredible. I had an accordion of Chipotle chip. It was amazing. It's possible. It's like probably top 10 best things to ever happen in my life was eating that guy.
I don't think I've had Chipotle in over a year at this point.
That's a mistake.
I get DoorDash Chipotle all the time. I'm going to get DoorDash Chipotle probably tonight.
I'm a frugal ass, and
you have to get
hate DoorDash because of how much it costs.
I always do steak. Is a carne asada really good?
It's better than the steak.
Really? All right, I'm trying it tonight.
It's basically just the steak marinated in delicious marinade.
Okay.
I always do half chicken, half steak bowl.
Solid.
Never burrito.
I don't hate their chicken, but it's...
I don't ever get the chicken.
There are days when it's not good. I've had their chicken, like, especially if you don't get it like right at like lunch or dinner time, it can be dry. Sitting that chicken there for too long kind of ruins it. The steak could sit for a while, and it's not going to be bad. It's be a little weird.
I just like having multiple types of meat.
Yeah.
I think it adds some texture to the bowl. I appreciate that. But yeah. I did order carryout for the first time all pandemic.
Oh, yeah?
That's right. I haven't had carryout the entire time of the fucking pandemic. There was a, I don't want to call it a bar, but it's a nice bar restaurant, if that makes sense. Think like a better version of Applebee's. Not like Snooty, but a better version. The place is called Ram. But
love
they do growler fills right now for like $7. So we went and got a couple growlers, went ahead and got, I got a nice burger with like jalapenos all over it, nacho chips, nacho cheese. Awesome. I miss good pub style burgers. That when you pick them up, you know you're going to need like 5 napkins to look acceptable after you're done eating.
Yep. Yo, I think that's the thing I've missed the most during all of this nonsense is I really, the main thing I want to do, I don't want to go crazy, like hanging out with people sounds great, but the thing I want the absolute most, I want to walk down the street, I want to sit in the restaurant that's next to my apartment, I want to pay way too much for a way too mediocre burger, and then pay way too much for an average beer, and sit there and watch sports that I don't have any interest in whatsoever. And I think that sounds like the best shit in the world.
Some of their beer is good. And also,
I like their beer. It's too expensive for what it is, but I do like it.
This place doesn't do it, but there was a bar in Columbus I love because the sports they would show were things like dodgeball and handball.
Nice.
Like, that is cool. A good fucking time, dude.
Nice.
Sitting around a bar, drinking a beer, watching handball.
I would go to a sports bar if they only played like ESPN 8, the Ocho stuff.
It's enjoyable. I like competition. So I don't like, I love watching a basketball game. Did you put a table tennis match in front of me? I'll watch that shit too.
Yeah. I think I just have to be weird. And I'm not going to sit and watch like basketball or football or baseball or anything. Like I'll watch some hockey. That is my exception. I will grind some hockey.
No one wants to watch baseball. That's right, Predator, if you're out there. No one wants
to. I love being at baseball games. Like if you're at a baseball game, you've got the popcorn, you've got your beer, your hot dog. Like, oh yeah, sign me the fuck up. It's always good just sitting there and chilling. But watching it on TV, I don't know how people do it. I can't.
Nah, dog.
Sluggers are gonna kill you guys.
There is a slugger, yeah. There is nothing about baseball that, even the game, like other pro sports are more enjoyable to be at. And if you're just going for the friend and atmosphere, shit, going to a bar and getting hammered is cheaper than a baseball game.
Yeah. I guess your beers aren't $20 at that point. But I do have to say, there's something, like, it's psychosomatic for sure. It's all in my head. But there's something that's just different about paying $20 for, like, a Bud Light and sitting in those really uncomfortable stands.
Dude, I just can't believe how expensive beer sports are. It was like $12 for me to get a 16-ounce metal can of Coors at an NBA game.
Yeah.
I would rather just drink water.
it was absolutely part of the environment thing.
Yeah.
But all the bars around the game were fine. It's just at the game was nuts. And the fun thing is, you see people, because, you know, people want to watch the game. So at quarter end, you would see a guy go up there and buy like 6-7 beers. And you're just wondering, he's like,
Jesus, that guy dropped
this dude
stack.
Alone?
Is it your friends?
That's where your brain automatically goes. Like, how many people is this for? Is this like 3-4 guys where it's like a 2 a piece? Or is this 2 guys and they're just going ham tonight?
Well, I used to go to, as a kid, I went to an epic and... Yes, I am admitting to child abuse. I went to an epic amount of Bengals home games. the only thing you can do when you go to Bengals home games, and I couldn't because, you know, cry. I was a child, crying and getting fucking tanked. And it was always great because we sat next to the same people all year long. And we
season
knew.
Ticket holders.
Yep, we knew. Right. They were going to get tanked, and if it was a losing game, it was going to be fun. If it was a winning game, it was going to be more fun, all because of the people there.
Yeah, and so there is something to be said about the idea of season ticket holders. Because the idea of going to the games and then being around the same people all the time, you get to know them, you get to enjoy them.
Yeah.
That is a different experience because they're your game friends. Like, yeah. You don't see them. Well, eventually you'll probably get to the friendship point at later, but you only hang out with them at games.
Yeah. Or like at the bar, like after you drive for an hour in Cincinnati traffic to get to that one sports bar that's really 15 minutes away, but it takes you an hour to get there. Yeah.
For all events, I think that, like, it's not the alcohol aspect of it, but like the pre-gaming at a bar kind of thing. Like, I've done some concerts for Adam where I've enjoyed the concerts, but I like the time Adam and I and one time Dobby just kind of spent at the pub beforehand, just chilling, talking, and drinking a beer or two.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
The pre-COVID stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. Even getting caught in traffic sounds kind of
romanticized
to me right now.
Nope. Dude, I used to drive Seattle rush time. Nope, I do not miss that.
Oh, when I get caught in traffic, I'm sitting on the bus and playing the Switch. Like, that's my traffic.
I used to drive the drive, dude. I had a 3-hour drive home one night. I'm good.
Fuck all of that. So, speaking of getting caught in traffic, I picked up Hitman 3.
Hey, I knew you would. What do you think so far?
It has 6 maps. There are 6 maps in the game. They are the best 6 maps in the modern Hitman trilogy so far. Now, I've only actually played 3 of them, but those 3 are setting high fucking bars for the entire series. It is amazing. So there's a level where you're going to an English manor. I'm gonna avoid like story spoilers, even though it's not really.
I don't think anybody plays Hitman for the narrative, Tom. It's fine.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't even know there was one.
Yeah, I thought there was missions. There are cutscenes too, and I'm just like, I don't want to skip them, but I honestly don't give a shit. I'm there to dress up as a flamingo and kill people in the stands at a F1 race. Like, that's why I play Hitman. And one mission, you're at a big ass English countryside manor. Think like Downton Abbey or something like that. Just big ass manor. And the mission story I decided to play was I knocked out a detective who was there to solve a murder. And I ran around interviewing people, finding clues, like Agatha Christie murder mystery style, solving a murder to then commit a murder right after I solved it. It was fantastic. We had to chase around this butler named Mr. Fernsby. And when I went through this the first time, I accidentally knocked Mr. Fernsby the fuck out and broke that quest line. So we reloaded. Because the game lets you do that. If there are important characters, submission stories, and you decide to fuck it up, the game just rolls with it. It says, oh, that was a critical character. Okay, find another way to kill your target, I guess. And you can! Like, that's Hitman. The level I'm on right now, I'm still going through it, you don't know who your targets are. Which, they did this in Hitman 2 on one mission that was really cool. Even when you complete the thing, they randomize the guy's appearance every single time, so you still don't know who you're targeting. You have to spend like half the level figuring out who this person is so you can then kill them. That's fun. The same way, except now your disguises are useless because you are hunting other trained assassins who recognize you through your disguises and are trying to kill you. So now, instead of you being like the elite hunter running around and murdering people and no one can touch you because you're dressed like a cowboy and they'll never suspect that, now it's everybody knows who you are. You have to run around and you're always looking over your shoulder because, fuck, is that guy going to try to off me? Or is he just a dude? Is that just a bartender? Or does he have a pistol? Like, and then you sneak around, you overhear some conversations, you kind of deduce, okay, yeah, this guy, oh yeah, he is here for me. He is trying to kill me. And then you have to counter sneak around the people sneaking around to kill them. It is so fucking good. And on top of that, I have all of the content from Hitman 1, Hitman 2, Hitman 3, all the DLCs loaded into one package. IOI was straight up when they said, hey, we're working on a solution. Hey, we found a solution. I have all the games in one package.
Nice.
New system, and the stuff that I unlocked in the second game by like mastering certain levels and locations have carried over. So if I want to dress like a clown during the murder mystery, I can. It's beautiful. If I want to like walk in at, with a fish as my sole weapon, which I have been starting off missions with only the fish, you can do that too. Yeah, the game is just a great fucking time. I am loving the hell out of this.
So the question everyone, I think, wants to know, does the homing briefcase still exist?
Yeah, of course.
Fuck yeah.
They, IO even talked about that. They said, yeah, okay, look, we understand this is a bug, but it's so much fun and people love it so much that we're not going to fix it. Like, enjoy it.
Good.
That was
such a weird thing, but I loved it.
I am having such a good time with this game because it is just stupid and mischievous. I think we were playing and somebody called out, wow, the AI really sucks, but they do. And it's on purpose. They suck so you can have a great time. And, you know, oh, that guy totally doesn't see me over this hedge that he really should. But that means I can sneak up and knock out the detective really quick.
Do they give you an option to bump up the AI or is it permabat? No.
So you can bump up the difficulty, which does do a whole lot of things, including, I want to say, preventing quick saving so you don't save scum. Because Hitman's a game where, yeah, I've saved scummed a lot. It's most fun when you don't, when you commit to those mistakes and you need to really pull stuff back. Adam, I bet you know how this feels in Metal Gear Solid. If you're like quick saving and save stating all the fucking time, you get caught, you reload, like that's fine, but isn't it way more fun to just lean into those mistakes and try to figure a way out of them?
Oh yeah, for sure.
So evade
the enemies, try to find a duck to hide in until they go away or whatever.
I got caught. It was a room. It was under lockdown. I couldn't get out, so I was hiding behind a pillar and people were like walking around the room trying to find me because they knew something happened there. And I got caught, so I had a can of cola and my trusty fish. I threw a fish at one of the guys, knocked him out, hit another guy with a can of Coke in the face, knocked him out, took his buddy's clothes, and then ran out, hid in the closet, and then just waited out the people. And they knew something was going on. Like, the guards were on higher alert because of that. And it was amazing because I watched a man in his fucking underwear holding an assault rifle looking for my ass. It was glorious and beautiful.
Best Hitman game.
I'm loving the hell out of this. So hooking the games together was a little bit annoying, but really worked without a hitch. So when you load up the game, it says, hey, if you have Hitman 2 on other platforms, you know, click here to go to this website to link the accounts together and we'll just suck everything over. So I did that, logged into my Steam, logged into Epic, made an account on IO's site or IOI's site. And it took about 3 or 4 minutes and they said, okay, here's all your progression. Here's the levels you got. Here's all your unlocks. Reload the game and all your shit should be there. And you know what? Yeah. I reloaded my game. All my shit was there.
Hey,
it was great. The only complaint I have about this is right now Hitman 3 is in online only mode and their servers are on fucking fire. So the first night I didn't buy it the first night. I bought it like 5 days afterwards. Their servers are on fire. I'm in the middle of a mission and a big dialogue box pops up and it says, oh, you lost connection to the Hitman servers. Click here to retry. And I click, and it's like, oh, click here to retry again. And I keep clicking. And it takes like 5 or 6 times, but it kept happening like every 5 minutes. It would lose connectivity. I would need to hit retry. Like in the flow of a mission, I would need to retry. And the one time I hit cancel, it just exited the game. Like, that fucking sucks. I wish they wouldn't have done that. But the game is good enough that it's not super impactful. It just kind of sucks.
So what does this mean for consoles? Because PCs, I mean, in air, but there's the assumption a PC is always online.
Yeah.
Consoles, like, there is definitively times when we know people won't have online access to consoles.
Yeah.
How are they getting around that?
Got me.
Sorry, you can't play. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, if you've got the disc, yeah, maybe you can play like with the disc in the console. But like, if you've downloaded it, no idea.
Because like, I got it with things with like Mag back on the PS3. The gameplay was online only.
Yeah,
like it was required to play the game. Same with like Titanfall. But this, I mean, you're not playing with other people, are you? Like, there's no Dark Soulsian kind of crossover, is there?
There are multiplayer aspects, but they're not baked into the single player game.
Okay.
One of my favorite multiplayer things, and this has been a thing in Hitman for a while now, is the community contracts. So players can pick random or like specific NPCs out in a level and say, okay, you have to kill these four people with a sword while dressed up as a flamingo without getting caught. And by the way, you'll start in this area of the level that's completely on the other side with a bunch of guards in your way. Good fucking luck. And you'll compete on that community contract for the very best like scores, times, whatever you're optimizing for. It is
really
cool. I have played some truly unique mission. I think this one was like Live by the Sword or something. And like, it was just fucking stupid and hilarious and fun to try to make everything work. And some of the missions are elusive, which means you get a set amount of tries to try to take this thing on before it just locks out. So,
oh, cool.
Without quick saves. So yeah, commit to those mistakes and lean into it and try to make it happen. I know some people really don't like that aspect, especially compared to the older Hitman games, because yeah, there's going to be a point in time where you get locked out of content because you fucked something up. But it does have a roguelike element to it, which I really do like.
Yeah, I have both sides of the coin. Like, I get the completionist aspect, but like, that kind of element of it isn't designed for someone to have 100% completion. That's not what it's there for. It's there for the freshness aspect.
Yeah.
And novelty, of course.
Yeah. Like, I think that kind of system is really fucking cool. It can really extend the life of a game.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been thinking this for a while. At some point, I got to get into the new Hitmans. Like, so much of that gameplay sounds like it'd be so enjoyable.
I would wait until, like, Hitman 1 and 2 are on sale. Pick those up, or pick up Hitman 2. It's got, like, a DLC for 1 to be applied to 2. Buy that on the cheap, then get Hitman 3 if you really like the gameplay, and then you can suck everything over and have all three games in one package. I also would not be surprised if they built, like, a collector's edition. Here's all Hitman 1, 2, and 3 World of Assassination games and, like, one $60 price.
That's probably what I'm going to end up doing.
Yeah.
Is it? I'm assuming it'll do kind of the Halo-esque thing where it's Hitman 1, 2, and 3, but all in the engine of 3.
Yeah, exactly. And that's how it works right now. That's what I've got currently installed on my machine. And if you want to, like, Hitman 1 and 2 are really cheap. Like, especially around Steam sale time, pick that shit up because it is some of the best fun you'll have for some of the least money.
Yeah, it's not a money thing for me. It's a time
investment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's not that I don't have time to play games. I have time and I play games, but I'm dedicated to the games that I play right now.
Yeah.
In a weird way. Like, Dota consumes a fuck ton of time.
Yeah.
And now there's a new one that's slowly creeping in and taking more time because holy shit, Slapshot Rebound's a lot of fun and requires a lot of mechanical mastery. Holy shit, that game's a blast.
Yeah, I saw you guys playing that.
It's whimsical, but at the same time, like, there's mechanics in that game where, like, it's hard. The momentum in that game is ultra realistic to a fault for a game by design, though. Like, you have to hit effectively a brake button to help you change momentum or to keep you in position or to receive a pass. And then to pass the puck, you don't hit A to pass. You move the mouse left and right to swing clockwise and counterclockwise.
Oh, okay.
So you have to
some more physics based, like Rocket League almost.
Yes, exactly. Like if I want to shoot, I'll swing left. If I want to pass, I swing left. I determine the difference by how fast and far I swing. Because there is, as far as the game's concerned, there is no concept of pass compared to shoot. There is just you're swinging. When are you stopping your swing? This is going to be the trajectory of the puck based on that.
Mm-hmm.
And they offer you an option when you're swinging to tilt your stick to like get lift and do like top shelf shots and stuff like that.
Oh, nice. I have to admit, I saw like just basically just that clip from last week's podcast where we did the plays of the month thing. And yeah. I did not expect any sort of depth from this game. Like just looking at it, I was just like, ah, just a casual, fun little, you know.
It's not going to be a game that sticks, but
well, yeah,
it's definitely got the complexity.
Yeah, I did not expect that. That's cool though.
But I don't want to overstate. Like, it's not like doing a flip reset, double touch kind of bullshit. It's just the core mechanics are what's difficult to learn.
Mm-hmm.
Where Rocket League, the core mechanics of drive, jump, flip are all relatively easy. It isn't until you start getting into the aerial and control the aerial that you start fighting the momentum a lot more.
Yeah, I can see that.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's free. So that's another really big aspect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Free $99. I might end up getting the supporter pack just because I think it's a good game. I want to support the devs. But it's just a lot of fun. And it's like, through the week, we'll play 2-3 matches of Dota. The last one sometimes gets you a little burnout. We're like, well, got like a half hour before I'm really wanting to go to bed. Do I really want to invest in another game of Dota? Or fuck it, let's boot up Slapshot, get a few games of that in before the end of the night. So yeah, it's going a really nice niche.
I'm going to need to start playing that because you guys are getting in on that grind.
Yeah, we're getting better. At this point, I probably got like 6-7 hours on it. So I'm starting to actually be able to do a little bit of stuff. And it's funny because like Heroic Saint, myself, and Dobby are playing a lot. Predatrix is playing some. I don't think any of us are the same level on any single part. Like I'm really good at the backhand stuff. Alex is great at shooting. Scott's just kind of, I don't know, Scott. So it's just really interesting how like there's different aspects to it that different people kind of pick up faster than others. But yeah, it's a good game. Pick it up. It's free. $3.99. So
very nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Adam, am I reading this right? You're starting to play Inside again?
I'm not starting to play it again. I just I don't know, I kind of wanted to play something, and like I said, I didn't really have any energy one day. I didn't want to play anything that was like super involved. I just wanted to kind of chill out and I was listening to another podcast, actually, and they brought up Inside, and I was like, man, I hadn't played that in forever. That was such a good game. So I booted up Inside, and because I'd already beaten the game, it's nice because you can just select, like, really easily select what chapter or part you want to play. So I played the beginning of the game a little bit, and then I skipped a couple of the puzzles and played a section in the middle that I thought was really cool, and then I skipped some of that stuff, and, oh, I forgot about this part, and It was just a lot of fun. I played the whole ending sequence again and watched that, which was just a blast. Inside was just one of the most well-made games I've played, and it was just, I don't know, it's just a collection of so many cool things. Excellent visual design. The sound design is insane. The world building, super, like, not clear story. Like, it's just, everything about it is just really cool. I don't know if we ever talked about this, but did you know that when the dude was making the soundtrack, he routed some of the audio through an actual human skull and recorded it?
The fuck?
What?
So, he was in it. So Inside is kind of a creepy game. Like, it's not outright horror, but it does have some definite like tension and creepiness to it. And initially, I guess when they were doing the soundtrack, he was using synthesizers and stuff because he kind of liked the like 80s, you know, Stranger Things sort of vibe. But then they were putting it in and he didn't like it because it was a little too, I don't know, not cheesy, but like it didn't fit that kind of creepy whatever. So he got this human skull and he was going to route some of the audio into it and then record the the resonance from the skull with contact microphones, which are basically just like regular microphones, but instead of sensing the vibrations in the air, it senses the vibrations on a surface. So he put these around this human skull, and he was like, just to see how it would alter the sound and see if it would, I don't know, add a creepiness to it. Like, you know how when you record your voice, it doesn't sound anything like you hear it when you're actually speaking?
Mm-hmm.
That's because the sound that you make with your vocal cords is vibrating through your jaw and your skull and all of that, and then it influences the way you hear things. So I think he was wanting to use that as kind of a way to change the sound of the soundtrack. So I guess it was an experiment, and it sounded like kind of bad, but with some post-processing afterwards, it added a really cool character to the sound.
So that's all good and well. Mm-hmm. How the fuck does one get a hold of a human skull?
I don't know. I mean, you could murder somebody. You could dig a grave up. I'm sure that there are legal ways of obtaining one. Like, I don't know.
So, it actually reminds me of a story from when I was working my tech job in college.
Oh, all God. Right. Can I ever?
I was at the IT help desk, and somebody decided the smartest thing to do, and just in case somebody was having trouble, they put the IT help desk phone number on every fucking single page of the school's website. So we got calls for everything from, hey, I need to pay my tuition, to how do I sign up for classes, to, hey, can I get help with my computer, which was the only legitimate call. I was working one Saturday morning, literally no one was there, I was the only one in the office. Like, I was there from 8 a.m. to noon, and then the full-timers took over. So, totally alone, I get a call. This is Doug. I got a dead body here. I said, you might just want to call, like, I mean, if you think it's a crime, like, call 911, but otherwise, like, I guess here's the police's non-emergency number. This is the computer help desk. We don't really deal with dead bodies much. Sure. He's like, no, it's a donation for medical sciences. I was like, oh, motherfucker. Okay. So I had to look up in our company wiki, and it turns out, our school wiki, and it turns out, yeah, there's some dude's cell phone number listed on a wiki page. Hey, if you get a weekend call for a dead cadaver, call like Fred here at this number. Here's a cell. And I call Fred. I was like, hey, I just got a call. I'm the IT guy. They told me that they got a dead body. He's like, oh, cool. Have him pull up to this building. Like, sure, man. Whatever you say.
Was he the sound designer and composer for Playdead?
he might have been. So, yeah, that was fucking great.
That was actually one of the very first places I went to Wright State. When I was in high school, there was a big class visit we did for physics, and they took us to the med lab, or the medical lab, where they did all the cadavers, and they had cadavers out while we were there. Like, oh, this is really interesting, but weird for a high school tour. But okay. What about you, Tom? Cool. What other games you got?
I played some Beat Saber last night.
Yeah,
setting some high scores. The mods are catching up, finally, again. Beat Saber had some big ass updates, and it's taken a while for the mods to get back into gear, and they have. So playing some stuff, some new stuff, some old stuff, and it's always fun. I think I put 75 minutes in last night, which was great. That's really about it. That's all I got for Beat Saber. Little bit of Pavlov, a very minor amount of Red Dead 2. Nothing really to talk about there, and I think that's it. Like, it's just been Hitman and Dota for me.
The rare Tom short game week.
Yeah.
I actually got in a little non-podcast Rocket League.
Oh, yeah?
And I played ranks, and I was ranking in with, like, low champs, high diamonds. And what I'm going to say might strike people as odd, controversial, or whatever, but I think some of the higher ranked areas have softened in skill.
Oh, were you surprised how bad everybody was?
Like, I haven't played like what we're doing right now, I don't consider legitimate Rocket League. Like, I'm brain dead, just kind of doing it while we're talking.
Mm-hmm.
I was going toe to toe with them, like not missing a beat. I wasn't getting outplayed, and I'd been away from that kind of Rocket League for probably close to 2 months now, maybe three.
Oh, yeah.
So I know what happens with that kind of break traditionally in Rocket League. I know how I should have been performing compared to my peers. That just wasn't the case.
Yeah.
And it's not because I got better during that 3 months.
I mean, you could have gotten a little better. Sometimes taking a break actually can help.
Yes.
But, no, I get what you mean, though. Like, I'm not saying that's what it was.
Like, to me, a week or two is that magic number where I come back, bad habits are lost, and I don't have the muscle memory to keep doing bad habits so I can actually reabsorb and relearn.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, this was, I legitimately think that people of my skill have actually progressed higher because of the influx of new players.
Yeah. Now, that's also said, because there was a soft reset this season too, wasn't there? So
yes, there
I'm
was.
Sure it has even, you know, settled even more. Yeah. So I think it was quite a while before high ranked people were actually getting the high ranks that they would have normally had.
Yes, and I do want to say, like, I'm talking, like, high diamond, high low champ area. Like, SSL is still going to be, like, cream of the fucking crop.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm not trying to blaspheme that kind of stuff. I'm just saying, in general, like, I know the lower ranks are harder now, but I think that when you get to, like, the mid-upper diamond area, that it's a little softer than it used to be.
Okay. Huh.
Which kind of caught me off guard.
I can't even remember the last ranked game I played. I'm pretty sure I don't have any ranks anymore.
I'm calibrating. Yeah, I'm calibrating on threes right now. This is the first one I played all season.
I don't really play ranked at all. The only ranked I play is, I guess, technically extra mode, since those are ranked now. But like Snow Day, Rumble, I'll play those. But I don't know. Like, it's fine, but I have stopped grinding Rocket League, I think, because I'm now grinding Dota. So my life has gotten significantly worse.
Yeah.
Like, I had a big step in my Dota life today. Actually had a coaching session today.
Oh.
So,
interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I not done that. Come on. Like, okay, you got to get kills. You got to not get killed. You got to take towers. You can't lose towers. You're done. All right, you owe me $100.
Hey, thankfully, like, these guys are like $25 an hour session kind of thing. So it's not that bad. But it's amazing. Like, I'm familiar with it. Well, we're 72 Pin Connector. We have Josh. Like, I'm familiar with the concept of coaching and what it does and how it's done. Like, I've sat in on some of the bigger sessions he was doing. But it still gets me, like, he was pointing stuff out to Dobby, and I was like, shit, that's kind of obvious, but how the fuck are we missing that? Literally the very next game, huge difference because we started to implement some of that stuff. And it's just... to speak to anyone, you don't have to want to do it professionally, but if you actually want to get better and you feel like you're hitting a wall, don't be afraid if you have like 15, 20 bucks you can spare to look into maybe getting a session with a coach. Like, any kind of game, it can make a really big difference if you actually want to try to get better.
So where are you finding these coaches? Like, I can get on Fiverr and ask any Yahoo to coach me. Right. But I don't know. How do you figure out, like, who is quality and who's just being shit? Right. Like, if I wanted to pay Josh to coach me at Rocket League, I can easily find his credentials. Oh, you manage an RLCS level team. This guy probably knows what the fuck he's doing. But like, if somebody asked me to coach them for Rocket League, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, but I can sure sound good.
Ratings and reviews.
All right.
But I will say, like, this is my first session with this dude. He was pointing out things. Like, I've been doing gamer class and stuff like that, so I've been listening to a lot of pro talk, too. Mm. And, like, what he's saying isn't different from that. It's just, it's the difference between getting generalized tips from pros talking positions and knowing general pitfalls and getting a dude looking at your exact replay and saying, why were you doing this? That was fucking stupid. You made this mistake right here. Here's what you should have been doing.
All right.
And getting that more pinpoint feedback. Like, even if the dude's not as good as other coaches, still getting that kind of feedback can really help.
Hopefully it was a little nicer about it than that, though.
I like brawn coaches. Like, I grew up in athletics, and in a weird way, a competitive marching band where our director was a perfectionist. I like bluntness. I don't want it sugarcoated. Tell me what the fuck I'm doing wrong quickly so I can learn how to address it quickly.
Fair.
But I also know that I...
But you can do that without calling somebody stupid.
Oh, he didn't call me stupid. It's never calling you stupid. It's saying, you fucked up.
Yeah.
Or that was a stupid decision. Like that kind of stuff. He'd never said the word stupid. But like, I'm okay with saying like, hey, that was a really dumb play. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with that. So that's like, I don't know. I think I kind of have thick skin when it comes to the criticism end though, too.
For sure.
A, professionally with my work, it happens a lot. But also just, I'm used to getting coached in a way that they're cursing at you and yelling at you sometimes in passion. But to be fair, a good coach, if they do that, they also have to be the same person that when you do well, they like raise you up on their fucking shoulders and like praise you as well. It can't just be purely wreck you.
If your coach didn't kick a trash can and call you fucking embarrassing, they're not a real coach.
Fucking embarrassing! Love it. Love it. If you haven't watched Letterkenny, watch that shit. Great show. Anyway, sorry, I had to get that out. I also did a little bit of EFT. I saw you were doing some, Adam. How'd your runs go today?
I didn't do any runs.
Oh, you didn't do?
No, I didn't end up playing. I launched it. I did some stuff and didn't really.
That
play
is
any
the
raids.
Only game I've ever done that where I've launched the game, spent an hour in the game, but never played.
Yeah.
I was doing some hideout stuff today where I'm trying to make some money on like power cords, I think, to wires. I think you were the one that told me about doing that.
Yeah, that's a decent one.
So pop on my generator, play a couple raids, get something set, turn it off. But I did get some quests done, some that had been pestering me for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Finally got the graphics cards out of custom that I had done two other times and forgot to turn in.
That's good.
So for those of you who aren't familiar with Tarkov, the way some of the quests work. Whenever you have to fetch an item out of a level, if you get the item and die, you still have to do it again. You have to actually extract with the item. And then once you extract with that item, it goes into this internal inventory system where it's on your character. And if you forget to turn it in and go to another raid and die, you lose it. So you have to do the quest all over again. I did that twice on accident.
Oh, that sucks.
So yeah, and then I had a really good raid where it started with, I'm just going to play really chill with a pistol. Within 30 seconds, I killed a PMC, took all his shit, and it turned into a real raid real quick.
Oh, nice.
And it went really well. I have one more pistol kill to go on a PMC. I'm pretty happy with that. Nice. Without doing it at factory.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll get it in no time.
Yeah. I've been doing a lot of pistol runs, so yeah. Got my economy back up now, though, so I can actually play again.
Hey.
Yeah.
Have to get some runs in soon.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do a little bit tomorrow morning if you're around.
Yeah, I'm never not around.
Yeah, that's all I am. It's like it's COVID time and it's not great fishing time. So, and hunting season's particularly done. So it's games.
Games.
Well, fellas, I mean,
I played a new game.
Oh,
you did?
Yeah, I played a launch day game and it's an Xbox exclusive.
What?
What?
It's...
What are you playing?
The Medium.
Xbox exclusive? I thought that was on Steam.
Nope. It's Xbox exclusive, which means it's on the Xbox Game Pass for PC, which is kind of weird.
Nice.
But yeah, it was billed as like a Series X exclusive, but then they launched it on Game Pass, by the way, on launch day, which I think is cool. So I didn't even have to pay to play. That. Like, I already had the Game Pass, so I could just play this new game on launch day. So nice. That's pretty cool.
How is it?
It's all right. It's okay. It's so it's by Bloober Team, which is the developer that made Layers of Fear and The Observer and Blair Witch. And it definitely feels like one of their games, but it is a departure. So this one is really heavily Silent Hill inspired. So you actually have like third person perspective, mostly fixed camera angles and stuff, which is cool. It is a horror game too, and it's not like tank controls straight up fixed cameras. Like it changes the camera angles and is more cinematic, kind of like those games of that era, but the cameras do still move a little bit, and then the controls are, you know, much more intuitive, where your guy actually moves the direction you move your analog stick, not just, you know, rotating. And
you don't have to know like some arbitrary. Yeah, I fucking hated that. Having to know the arbitrary direction to go, even though it's not oriented to your character at all.
I mean, it is. Yeah, I know what you mean, but yeah.
Yeah, it made some of the old games a little clunky.
Yeah.
I never actually minded that, but I think it's because I spent so much time playing old school Resident Evil that it just kind of made sense.
Yeah. But no, the controls work out pretty well. If you played the Resident Evil 1 remake, they had the alternate control scheme so that people didn't have to play the tank controls, and it works really well. You basically just, you know, your analog stick works in whatever direction based on the camera positioning. But if you move into a new scene where the camera changes and you keep holding the analog stick, your player will still go forward in the same direction they were going.
Oh, thank God.
On the old camera relative. And then as soon as you move the analog stick again, then it changes direction. So it's pretty intuitive. It's not, I mean, the controls overall are still a little sluggish, but that's kind of the point, I guess. Like, that's how those games always are.
Yeah.
So that's not too bad. But the main gimmick of the whole thing, I guess, is they're doing this like split screen thing where they're rendering the game twice. So basically you play as a medium. You have like these, you know, mind powers and everything, and you end up like kind of seeing and being in this alternate reality of the world, kind of like a, it's not hell, but it's like some kind of weird in between spiritual hell horror world, right? And they'll actually, like, there will be sections of the game where it actually literally split screens the game, and you have the hell world version and the real world version running at the same time. And there are differences between the two worlds, and they use that as their kind of puzzle mechanic. So, like, maybe there's a staircase in the horror world that all goes all the way up to the next floor, but in the real world, the staircase is broken. So you can't go there in either world because you're kind of locked to your physical body. So they use the puzzle mechanics like that, where you have to kind of interact with things between the two worlds to kind of solve puzzles and stuff. And it's kind of cool because they're both on the screen at the same time, and you go up to interact with something. Well, there's an interact button for the spirit world, and there's an interact button for the real world. They kind of separate that in a way, so it's pretty cool.
Nice.
The only thing is, like, I feel like they can do a lot more with it. Like, it's a cool idea to have those two worlds like that, and that was a lot of their marketing. But so many of the puzzles are not very hard. Like, it's just a matter of using your character abilities and just like figuring out which thing to hit X on. Like they could have had so much more depth, I think, in the gameplay.
Do you think the depth might come later and this is kind of softening people into it? Or do you think, like, hey, this is probably all they're really gonna do with
it? I mean, the dev studio isn't known for their gameplay mechanics. They're known for their atmosphere and horror, which, by the way, is fantastic. I mean, the atmosphere is really cool. The sound design is good. The music is incredible, which, by the way, was written by the dude that did the Silent Hill music. So no surprise there. Music is fantastic. The graphics are pretty good. It doesn't run well at all.
Ooh.
The split screen sections, it's literally running two copies of the game, right? Because you have separate post-processing effects and separate, you know, all kinds of stuff that has to be rendered basically twice. So the performance per, you know, your PC is not good.
Do you think it was maybe optimized for Xbox instead?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I know on the Xbox it only runs at 30 FPS. But no, like, I have a pretty beefy PC. I have a 2080 Super and a 3900X CPU, and I'm getting like 60 with dips lower.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Sounds kind of rough.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. But, you know, I get it though. Like, they're doing a new gameplay mechanic thing that has to, I'm sure there's a lot of technical limitations, and I don't know the best way to do that because I'm not a programmer, but So I'll give them a little leeway on that for sure, just because. But yeah, overall, I'm kind of, I don't know. I just feel like it could be way better than it is.
I mean, the cool thing is, and hopefully, like, we've seen this with other games where one game introduces a mechanic and it seems really fucking cool, and then another game is the one that'll actually implement it in a way that is meaningful. So, like, hopefully, like, this dual world thing in a horror game, like, that's a really cool concept.
Yeah.
And I think a horror game is a really good space where you can really pull out, like, the spiritual world and have, like, two worlds at once.
Mm-hmm.
So I really hope someone pulls it off and it doesn't turn into another fucking system like the Nemesis system, where everyone hopes to get it somewhere else and it never happens.
Yeah.
Ooh. Well, so actually, there was a great video on the Nemesis system by Mark Brown of Game Maker's Toolkit that I watched through just yesterday, where he dove into some of the tech behind it. I think the reason that you don't see the Nemesis system anywhere else, WB actually has a patent on it.
What? How?
You got me. But yeah, that's why you don't see the Nemesis system fucking anywhere, because he said the exact same thing. He said when this came out, everybody expected it to be everywhere. But WB's got a patent, because Mark Brown is British, so it's patent instead of patent.
I was wondering if that was intentional.
Yeah, that's why you don't see it, because game devs don't want to pay or potentially get sued. Do you guys remember The Simpsons Road Rage? They were actually sued by Sega for using some UI elements that Crazy Taxi had a patent on.
Hmm.
It's a thing. Sorry.
That sucks.
Yeah. I do want to clarify something for chat. When Adam called it an Xbox exclusive, so anymore being an Xbox exclusive doesn't mean it's not on PC. It just means Microsoft puts it on Game Pass, and the Game Pass is exposed through platforms like Epic and Steam. Just want to call that out. Seems weird to call an Xbox exclusive, but technically it's what Microsoft's doing. It's for them, most things, it's no longer technically Xbox exclusive. It's Microsoft exclusive is probably the better way for people to view it now. And I love that they're doing it. Like they're, like you said, they're putting launch titles on there. As soon as they launch, it's excellent.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I'm going to buy it on Steam and run it on Linux. Might be Microsoft's exclusive, but they can't stop me. I can't read.
You already have Game Pass, Tom. Just install it and play it.
I know.
He needs to make it hard. It's what he does. He has to make things difficult.
Yeah.
Yep. Always and forever.
All right. I think that's it. Anyone have any other games or wanting to get out there?
Not really, no.
All right. Well, let's get on into some news, shall we?
No.
So Steam, once again, no stranger to this kind of litigation, is potentially going to get sued for anti-competitive behavior. In the realm of, I don't want to say price fixing, but kind of like price fixing, where they're forcing developers to say, whatever price you're putting the game on for us, you can't have it lower anywhere else. So let's say, I just blanked on it. Any dev house, let's say dev XYZ is putting their game on Steam for $20. They can't put it on Epic for $19 with an agreement that they sign with Steam. And this is interesting because Steam takes more margin. So let's say Steam takes a 30% cut, which is what they do, and a developer wants to make $7. They'll put the game on Steam, so they make $10, so they make $7. At Epic, they can put that same game for $8.50 and make $7. But because of their Steam agreement, they're not allowed to do that. So now I think it's over in Europe. There's actually some lawsuit coming out against Valve saying, listen, you're artificially holding the price of games up higher than it needs to be because they can't actually drop it on other platforms and cause competition.
So Valve's response to the whole thing is, look, we do this to prevent review bombing. Because if a dev charges more on Steam because Valve takes a bigger cut than they do on Epic, they could get review bombed from people saying, oh, this game is $12 over here, but it's only $10 over here. And yeah, I get that, but frankly, it's a shitty fucking excuse. Like, saying that you have to normalize the price across all stores is, at least to a non-lawyer person such as myself, an average consumer, that's pretty fucking shady.
Like, I think it could be okay. I think it could be okay if they, on their terms, would also agree to only put the fees of the other platforms, like make it a complete level playing field.
Yeah.
As it is, Steam charges more fees than any other platform out there because they have the market share. Ooh. So it is, it's fucking weird, man. They are locking people into this and they have to play ball because if you're not on Steam, you're going to get left in the fucking dust.
Yep.
True. Quick shout out to Relentless for the raid. Thanks for joining, everybody. We're just recording the podcast. We're talking about some stuff, about some general gaming stuff. Thanks for that, man.
I have to say though, like in response to your comment that if you're not on Steam, you're not anywhere and you're not making the bank. IOI Interactive for Hitman 3 has already made back the cost of development, and they released exclusively on Epic for I believe a year. So you can make money other places.
You can. I
more so now than ever.
It's harder.
For sure.
It's harder, and they're an established franchise that people were anticipating.
Yeah.
I think that's a big part of that too.
Yeah.
They might have been able to do this. Exactly. They might have been able to do it as an independent release on a single launcher.
Oh.
They still probably would have done that.
Speaking of independent, this is going to sound weird. Hitman 3 is an indie game. It was developed and published fully by IOI. There are no other publishers involved, so technically, that makes them an indie developer.
Well, okay. Wouldn't that make like Madden an indie game, though, by the same right?
Yes, it would. And any Ubisoft game.
EA, the biggest indie developer in the country, or in the world. No, I get what you're saying, though. I do appreciate that. Fuck, who was the holder of that? Was it Activision?
Square Enix.
Square. Yeah, there we go. I couldn't remember who it was. I do appreciate that they let them walk with the IP. That was a really classy move.
Yeah. Actually, if I remember correctly, Square is still a minority shareholder in IOI. Like, they didn't completely cut them off. They just said, we don't really see us being in, like, hardcore business with you, but we'll be an investor.
Yeah, but I mean, what I mean by that, though, is Square could have said, yeah, you guys can walk, fine. You're not taking fucking Hitman with you.
Yeah, you know, Square, even, like, in... Noclip did several documentaries with IOI, and they said, yeah, it was a period of turmoil. Yeah, it really sucked to have our parent company drop us like that, but they were great throughout the whole process. Like, there's no bad blood between IOI and Square, which is fucking great to see. I mean, like, business breakups, I mean, any breakups are never fun for anyone, but if you can remain classy through the whole thing, more power to you.
Yeah, it's like mom and dad still really are having a friendly relationship, so the kids have a good time.
Yeah.
Us being the kids, because God damn it, we want Hitman.
Damn right we do.
On to the next. CD Projekt Red is releasing modding libraries. In other words, community, before, fix our game.
I was going to say, and before the modders fix all the bugs before CD Projekt Red does.
Yep. This is going to turn into a straight up Bethesda situation. A lot of people are reporting this as, oh, look, CD Projekt Red released gaming or modding tools. They didn't release modding tooling. They said that we understand that most modders just make their own tooling because they're going to spend way more time on something like that and make it way more extendable than we will. So here's the libraries to hook into the game. Make your own fucking tools because you will anyway. Cool.
I like it, but I can't read it any differently than fix this damn game for us.
Please.
We don't know what we're doing. Please fix CD. Please fix our cyberpunk.
As long as they don't do the Bethesda thing of the modders fix it, and then they force the modders to sell the mods, and they won't allow them to give it for free.
Well, Bethesda never forced the modders to sell any.
They forced them to put it into a marketplace, though.
No, they did not force them to do anything like that.
I thought they did all mods through their own thing for a minute and then they repelled it.
On console, yeah. On PC, no, it was always a full free open modding marketplace.
Well, let's be honest. There's a lot of fucking console people that have this game.
Yeah. Didn't but nobody mods on console. One mods on console. Not a thing that happens.
Didn't somebody make a mod where you could bang Keanu Reeves and they were like, hey, don't do that?
Yes, I read an article where it explicitly was calling out that they're not going to allow that.
You release modding tools. What did you think was going to happen?
I mean, what are they gonna do, right? Like, if somebody just puts it on a website and you download it, like, what the fuck are they gonna do? Yeah, they can sue the mod developer, but that doesn't really get rid of the issue. It's like the fucking patches for The Sims. Like, what the fuck is EA gonna do here? Nothing. It's the internet, man. It's just gonna happen.
The difference is this is like a direct likeness of a person.
Yeah. I'll leave that one away.
Let's not touch that.
The internet, dude. Things are gonna happen.
Things are gonna get weird.
What was it? I can't remember. Rule 23 or 34.
World,
34.
Yeah. 23 is different. Very different.
Oh god.
Oh, 4chan. World is a better place with you being forgotten. Anyway.
Neat.
Tom, I'll let you touch this one because I didn't get a chance to actually read through all of it.
So Riot Games, my controller's completely frozen up, so I'm going to get kicked. Sorry, guys. Riot Games is trying to evade a gender discrimination suit. So there is a gender discrimination class action lawsuit against Riot Games. And they said, we don't want to go to a lawsuit. You guys are going to have to arbitrate. Yeah. Yeah, because we can win that. Please. We'll see what happens with that. But come on, Riot.
Where is this happening? Is this in the Chinese area, or is the, I don't know.
No, I believe
this China, is in America, or?
I believe this is in America. Okay. So there's a lot of companies that try to force arbitration, and they're trying to say, oh no, we're forcing arbitration for everything. Oh, my controller is completely fucked. I'm totally distracted because everything is so fucked up. Anyway. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're trying to wheels their way out of it, and that's fucking shady.
In other words, in case people are not in the know, what this means is instead of going to an actual unbiased court, they're doing an internal hearing inside the company for the stuff, aka, hey, we can wash our hands clean. If we find ourselves wrong or dumb with wrongdoing, it legally will not come to it. We'll just pay people out of pocket.
Yep. So, that's fucking shady. But Riot has been in hot water with gender issues for a long, long, long-ass time, and this is just more of the same. So if you're looking for a nice, equitable game company to work for, Riot is probably not your first stop.
Yeah, we'll just leave it at that with Riot. There's a lot more there that you can read into and look into. I don't think that this is the place to get into that, though.
No.
And I'm not saying that to, like, cop out, but, like, look into who Riot... Look who Riot is, where they're based, and start looking into what I'm talking about. I'm not going to put us there, though.
Contact your employment lawyers with any questions.
Anyway, final story. This one's a fun, weird one that's going to cost Tom a lot of money. Valve is seriously experimenting with brain control interfaces. Play video games with your brain.
So this is really fucking cool. Apparently... like, they have psychologists and programmers working on this shit inside of Valve itself. So it's literally an EEG net headset thing that you wear on your head, and it reads your brain waves to do stuff in a video game, turns your brain into a controller. I mean, don't get me wrong, this is still really early days for this technology. It's not going to be out tomorrow or next year or in 2022. Like, this is future stuff that Valve is working on, but they are seriously working on it, which is really neat. The other thing they're looking into is not only the read aspect of reading your brainwaves to make things happen in a computer game, they're looking at the write aspect. Gabe has a quote in here that says, yeah, the science behind like writing stuff to your head to remove things like VR motion sickness, the science is pretty easy. The regulatory aspects around us writing stuff to people's brains is not so easy. So if you've played Cyberpunk 2077, you've seen like the brain dance sort of stuff that they've got in that world. Yeah, it's that kind of sci-fi stuff that Valve is talking about doing, like inserting emotions and feelings, physical and like mental emotional feelings into a person's head while they're playing a game.
What?
Sign me the fuck up.
What?
Like if you played Red Dead Redemption 2 or Final Fantasy 15, you see that amazing looking food. Yeah, you want to taste that shit? Here the fuck you go. Enjoy. Sign me the fuck up.
You're playing Call of Duty and you want to feel what a 50 cal feels like to get shot by?
Sign me the fuck up. You playing The Last of Us 2 at all? And you want to experience any of that? I'll pass.
So I am all down on brain control. Like, they read your waves and you control the game. Soon as you start manipulating my brain, man, nope. we're a different ball game. I don't think I'm down for that. I'm watching up Black Mirror to know where that shit goes.
Yeah.
Jack my consciousness out and put it in the net, man. Like, I am in. Make me a Square Enix microtransaction. I am ready for this future.
Like, you think it's painful when hackers get into your fucking bank accounts? They can get into your fucking brain.
Tom's going to be Cypher from the Matrix and making deals with the AI machines.
Damn right I am. Making deals, I'm going to be the AI machine. Fuck that.
I might have to actually go off the fucking grid. Like, this shit's nutty.
And Valve, like, Gabe is not an idiot. Valve is not a company full of idiots. They even say, like, in this interview, the bottom section is, yeah, here's all the ways that this technology can be really problematic and super dangerous. And, you know, we're all going to have to try to figure out ways around this before it gets too far into the other direction. But hey, wouldn't this be really fucking cool to just, like, put somebody into a video game for a little bit? Like, shit, that sounds great.
In the utopian world, it would be the best gaming experience ever.
Yeah.
In a dystopian world, it would ruin your fucking life.
And in reality, it's probably going to be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah. It's also going to be a ways off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So right now you can get a, like, alpha build level headset, like everything all inclusive for about $3,000. It's not cheap. It is literally meant for researchers. If you want to play with like neurological research, you can. And you can buy all this hardware for about $3,000, which, I mean, that's kind of amazing in and of itself. You don't need a research grant and $300,000. You need $3,000. And a computer. And that's it. Oh, and by the way, all this shit is open source. Like, it's all out there. It's completely public. Or public and published. You can just fucking print your own headset if you want to. You get your own wiring, you get a 3D printer, you just print this shit.
So you remember how awful malware and viruses and Trojan all that bullshit was when people first discovered Kazaa and BearShare and shit? Just reimagine that. Only infecting your body. No big deal.
I am so into this. Like, okay, don't get me wrong. Half-Life Alyx was one of the most immersive VR games I have ever played. One of the most immersive games I have ever played. Hook that shit directly up to my spinal column and put me in there, Gabe. I am ready. I need more Half-Life in my physical, bodily life.
Jesus.
But yeah. So that's that. It's really fucking awesome tech that's probably in about 7 years we'll be talking about a second alpha version of it, because come on, we're not getting this before like 2040. But
and
it's really cool tech, and it's awesome they're working on it.
To say in about 15 years you can look forward to the full review on this podcast when I finish wiring my brain directly up to my gaming PC to play Half-Life 3.
Getting step-by-step instructions fed to him through his Google Glass.
Yep.
That's right. Anyway.
Tom, do you still have that?
Yeah.
When's the last time you used it?
Well, you see, it hasn't gotten security updates in years and years and years. So
does it just brick it, basically?
No, it doesn't brick it, but it's like running an Android phone that hasn't been patched in like 6 years. Not a good idea. So, it sits in a drawer and it gets no use.
Okay. That was kind of cool at the time.
That.
Yeah. Oh, it was great. I do not regret buying it at all.
Yeah. That was when you were going to IO pretty early or pretty often.
Yep.
Like, you went like 2 or 3 years in a row, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. At the time, I don't know if this is still a case, but at the time they had a nice student package. So you could get tickets on the cheap. And at the time, Google I.O. gave you like $1,000 worth of free bullshit Google hardware every time you went. So I left I.O. 2012 with like $1,500 worth of gear on a $300 student ticket. Pretty decent investment, if I do say so myself.
Yeah.
You walked away with a new phone every year.
Yeah, I did.
And the one year it was literally the phone I had just bought.
Yeah, brand new flagship phone.
That's pretty cool.
It was, they literally had look under your chair moments. Like, hey, yeah, and here's our new Galaxy Nexus device. The hottest phone on the market for a reasonable price. And if you reach under your seat right now, you can just start playing with Jesus. It. And everyone's like, what the fuck? Yeah, it was, Google I.O. was goddamn nuts.
Was Oprah there or something?
It was Oprah of the tech world.
Yeah, basically. I'm looking forward to brain interfaces. The thing that people aren't really talking about, though, and I don't want to leave this on the table, this is fucking huge for accessibility. Like, right now, we have Microsoft, gaming can be divisive, right? You've got everything from swatting, you've got microtransactions, you've got bullshit companies, you've got, like, review manipulation. There's a lot of bad in gaming, but generally, one of the just unending bright spots is how much companies are working together to make their games more accessible. Everything from colorblind modes to Microsoft putting out physical fucking hardware for people who have like motion issues to make sure that, hey, you want to play Halo? Here you go. Plug in this accessible controller with a bunch of different pieces into your Xbox. Play whatever the fuck you want. Enjoy. And accessibility is getting better and better.
Dude, The Last of Us 2's accessibility options were insane.
Yeah.
There was so much there for so many different types of
issues. Even Hitman 3, which doesn't have great accessibility options, but the first thing you're presented with is, hey, here's your subtitle options, and here's how you can like make things bigger on the screen so they're easier to read. I was playing on my couch, and I wanted big-ass subtitles. Drag that shit over, and it just fucking works. It's great. But these brain control interfaces mean that, you know, as long as your head works okay, you can play a game, right? Like, Rocket League requires a pretty dexterous amount of control on this guy, and some people, unfortunately, just don't have that ability. If Rocket League had a BCI interface, slap that net on your head and get to grinding, man.
Yeah, I think the best thing we have right now is what Microsoft's doing with, like, their adaptive controller.
Yeah.
Options on their platform, which I don't know if you haven't seen that shit, look into what they're doing with their adaptive controllers. That shit is so awesome.
Cool. So fucking cool.
It is a shining light in the gaming industry.
Yeah. Yeah. I will always have an amount of respect. Like, I, as much as I complain about Microsoft, when it comes to the accessibility stuff, man, they are unparalleled in the gaming industry. Love to see it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, not to get us off the high road, because that felt really nice. That's a nice way to end. So you know what? But then.
Yeah.
So for all you out here watching us on Twitch, thank you. We do have a YouTube, 72 Pin Connector, where we put all of our podcasts, our plays of the month, and some clips whenever I'm not a lazy ass and other various stuff. So you should go out there and check that out sometime. If you're watching this podcast there, thank you. We appreciate it. But Twitch is where you should really be watching us live every Saturday night, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. It is hands down the best way to consume our podcast. You could be in the chat, be in the conversation, sniper lobbies, be in the game. It's just an all-out good time. We also have a Discord where we play all sorts of games, such as Slapshot Rebound, Dota 2, Rocket League, all sorts of different shit. And if you're thinking, well, Eric, that sounds great, but how do I get into this Discord? Well, you go to 72pinconnector.com and everything's there. Our Discord, our swag shop, buy our shit, our YouTube, our Twitch, it's all there. So just head over to 72pinconnector.com and get you where you need. And all that said, I think that's all we got for you guys this week. So until next week, game on.
See everybody.